Welcome back to our morning show on WRCO and WRCE. We're kind of dovetailing in from the talk about the milk and the cheese benefit and local farms donating milk or money toward the milk, toward a little story about the family farm. And we're going to talk to an author who joins us live by a phone today, Brian Reisinger, who has a new book called Land Rich, Cash Poor on the market. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So a little bit about your story. You grew up in the area, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. I hope you don't mind my saying that actually the story begins a little bit with us listening to your station in my dad's barn. I grew up in the Spring Green area, working with my dad from the time I could walk. And I'm fourth generation. My dad is a third generation farmer. And my sister still works the farm with him and is working to take it over there in rural Spring Green area. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah, when I left a message, you said you kind of recognized the voice, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. We grew up hearing you in the barn, and so it's honestly a little bit of an honor for a local farm boy to be on the station with you this morning.
So, well, let's talk about that. Then you graduated from River Valley High School, am I right?
Yeah, that's right. I graduated from River Valley High School in 2003, and, you know, I'd worked with my dad all my life, and I found that my talent was more for words than cattle and crops, and so they'll still throw me in the tractor now and then, and I do help out on the business side, but I went on after River Valley to UW-Eau Claire, and I studied journalism and political science, and I worked as a journalist for a number of years, and I worked in public policy, and I started thinking about, you know, my roots growing up and how much I value that and how much I value my time there, and also about the world that I'd been in, seeing what was going on in our economy, what was going on with our government, and I thought it was important to write a story of what is happening to our farms and why.
How long has this book been in the works, Brian?
Well, I've had the idea for more than a decade, and but as far as actual work on the book, I really turned the page toward this project about 2 years ago and got interest in it and found that there's a realization that nationally we're losing our farms, they're disappearing, and that Wisconsin is kind of an epicenter of that. At the same time, there's a lot of amazing resilience, and so spending the last 2 years interviewing my family, spending the last 2 years investigating what's been going on in our economy has been a real honor. And I'm very lucky because I had this in the back of my mind for a long time. I talked to a lot of people, including my grandma, including other people from my grandparents' generation, going back several years, not knowing what I was going to do with it, but having just reams and reams of interviews with people who'd lived through the Depression and all these different times that would otherwise be lost to time. So I feel very fortunate for not necessarily knowing what I was going to do with it, but knowing I wanted to talk to people and figure out something to do with it someday.
Yeah, you talk about the four generations of your family farm, and you mentioned the Depression, but I think about all of the different eras and hardships. You know, the 80s farm crisis comes to mind, so, you know, they've survived a long, long time through some hardships, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. And the thing that was a really amazing discovery for me was seeing the places where what's happened in our country lines up with the things that my family experienced. And I think it's just we were in a time and a place, and it was a real challenge for our family at different points and places. But it's also a special thing to be able to look on back on that heritage. And what I tried to do with the book is I tried to tell a hidden history of each era. So with the Depression, actually, the Depression set in much earlier on farmers in the Midwest than it did for the rest of the country. Many people don't know that. I didn't know that till I dug into it. And you're right, going on up through each era, through the 50s, on up into the 1980s when my parents survived the farm crisis, on into the 90s and 2000s, each era I try to tell a hidden history beneath the surface, and I found that it really connected with something that occurred with my family, whether it was a harrowing story of farm injuries, or whether it was economic upheaval, or whether it was a beautiful story of something that our family overcame or something that shows our way of life. So I felt very fortunate for that.
I think about the Depression era, and it was terrible, you know, as far as buying gas and those kind of things, but they also had meat, they had their own vegetables that they canned and everything like that. They were pretty well set up to survive through the Depression on the family farm, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. The amazing thing is it was such a difficult time, excuse me, but it was a time of major upheaval where also you had people climbing in the middle class. My grandpa survived the poverty of the Great Depression, and by the time he was a grown man, he was in the middle class and secured that middle class living for my dad and for us. And, you know, that ended up being something that began to slip away from many farmers as time went on, but it's really incredible to see what they survived.
Yeah, I used to, when I first started, I would drive down the valley and see all the lights on in the barns, you know, they were milking and doing chores. It's rare to see that anymore, Brian.
Yeah, it is. And that's where I do think it's important to talk about the serious issue that's been going on here. We've seen it all over Wisconsin. It's also happening all over the country. We've lost 45,000 farms per year annually in the last century. That's based on some data that I got for the book that I analyzed in a new way and took a look at. And it was just a shocking number to me. And, you know, it's incredibly sad. It also has a huge impact on our food supply. It is one of the issues that is contributing toward higher prices for food that has risen at a far higher rate than the rate of inflation that everybody's debating. It has impacts on the security of our food supply during disasters. And it also contributes to the rural-urban divide and all these issues of hollowing out of the rural economy, things that have been happening to our area that are difficult and unfortunate, and they have an impact on the whole country. Now, I do want to say, though, the flip side of it is there's incredible resilience. We still have 2 million farm families. My dad and sister are still farming. There's 2 million farm families across the country, farms of all sizes, and they are working hard to continue to be able to feed this country. And so there are things that we can do about it, but it's definitely a story of difficulty. And I think it's one that it's important that we face because it's right under our noses. And people locally you talk to, they know it. But I don't know if the rest of the country did.
I think, too, we've seen a resurgence in people, you know, like farmers markets and things like that, and people wanting to know where their food comes from. So that's kind of turned around a little bit in the last few years, too, hasn't it?
It really has. It's an incredible opportunity that we actually have. I mentioned those 2 million farms. There's still 2 million farm families trying to farm. Some of them are farms that do supply our food, and some of those are larger farms. A lot of them are medium and smaller farms. 96% of them are family farms. That means we got nearly 2 million families that are working hard, and many of them have their farm as kind of side income right now. And if there was a way for that to be a growing entrepreneurial business again, imagine what we could do for our local economy and for the whole country. Now, that happens at the same time that you're right. People are more interested where their food comes from than they ever have been. So if we can connect that with more farmers markets, more restaurants carrying farm to table, you know, more local places to buy food, more local grocery stores, more local specialty food stores, all of the above, all the different ways that people could get their food if we were buying more of it locally, we can have that big national supply chain. We can also have real rural regional economies that allow us to buy our food from all kinds of places, nationally and locally. I think there's a world where we can do that, where the farmer and the consumer can meet, because you're right, people are more interested in that than ever.
Having lived in Wisconsin, I know you've spent some time in Northern California as well. How's the agricultural climate in California compared to Wisconsin?
You know, I'll tell you, I'll always say that the happy cows reside in Wisconsin, first of all. but the truth is that there's a lot of incredible agriculture all across this country. And you're right, I split my time. I spend part of my time on our family farm in southern Wisconsin. Lucky enough that my family still has that farm and I'm able to be there. And then part of my time in Northern California, small town up in the hills in Northern California near my wife's family. And so I see agriculture in both places. And in California, the farms are much bigger. They tend to have a lot of other things mixed in. There's a lot of dairy, but there's also a lot of fruits and vegetables and almonds in addition to your traditional row crops, things like that. So it's a really robust agricultural economy. Here's the thing. A lot of people remember during the happy cow debate, you know, those big California farms and meantime the Wisconsin farms were going down. The California farms have had a really hard time. And meantime, Wisconsin did carve out a niche for itself with a rural regional economy around our master cheesemaker program. And so there's ups and downs in both places. We want to see robust agriculture all across the country. And I think it's a really cool thing that Wisconsin has that strong regional economy around cheese that has allowed it to remain strong and resilient, even though we have lost so many farms and even though there have been some hard times.
Brian Reisinger, I guess, the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor. As you were doing your research, any stories that come to mind, some things maybe you learned that you didn't know about your family's farm?
Yeah, you know, there are some really incredible ones. I could go on about that forever, but I guess the one that really sticks out most to me is I think about my dad. I think about my dad growing up in the 1950s. He was 8 years old when my grandpa, Albert Reisinger, who a lot of people locally might still remember, fell off a corn crib, fell 30 feet and broke his back. And at the tender age of 8, you know, my dad stepped up to work on the farm. And to be honest with you, he never really let up. And so he's 72 now. And so he's been doing that for well over 60 years. And, you know, there's a lot of difficulty with that. I think about times he told me about walking in the bedroom and seeing his dad for the first time and discovering that. And that was a really difficult and dramatic thing to hear and to work through as I tried to figure out how to tell that story in the book. But it's also an incredible story of the kind of resilience we have. We have families like that all over the area. People who stepped up, people who learned to work hard, and people who have lived this. It's down in their blood. It's down in their bones. And When I think about that and I think about my dad doing that, it makes me really proud of what farm families in our area are able to accomplish as well.
Farming, I mean, it still is, but it really was dangerous back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it's dangerous today with major machinery and all of that sort of stuff, but boy, it really back in the day was. We actually, one of the first stories I tell in the book was of my grandpa's brother, and he was 2 years old when he was out in the hayfield. His dad didn't know, and the horses accidentally ran over him and injured his leg really severely. And he ended up living through that. That was Herman Reisinger, and he ended up living through that, and he ended up being able to be a successful farmer and businessman and really overcoming that. But boy, there were things like that that happened. There were wagons that ran over people. There were serious falls. I mean, back especially in the early days of pre-depression and depression, there just wasn't the machinery, and so there was all the heavy work that was done by hand, and there was so much more danger than there even is now. But to your point, it's been a dangerous profession all throughout, you know, the past century.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I grew up on the farm too in a different era, but when, you know, I was 7 or 8, I was probably driving, you know, the hay rake, which is unheard of now. Mm-hmm. If you put a 7 or 8 year old, of course, the machinery is a lot bigger, but that's how we grew up, right?
Yeah, that's right. I remember doing the side rake too. You know, it's amazing how things change. I mean, even me, I'm 39 years old now, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And I remember I tell stories about, you know, picking rock by hand. I'm sure there's a lot of people who grew up in our area doing that. We would walk the fields and we'd pick rock by hand until our bucket got full of rocks and we'd dump them on the wagon and it was under the hot sun. And it seems like something almost from another era now. My dad does have a rock picker that we can take through the field to help with that. But it's just amazing the amount of change in technology that has come and gone on farms and the different things that people grew up doing. I never tire of hearing of those things.
Right. And then growing up on the farm, obviously that provided you a great work ethic that I think has probably helped you later in life, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, when I didn't farm, I struggled with that for a little while because I really felt like I should have. You know, I was the first eldest son in 4 generations who didn't. And I'm so grateful that my sister's been taken over. But it's something I struggled with. And what I discovered as I went out into my working life is that I was so fortunate to have grown up on the farm, learning to get up at 4 a.m. and get to work, because it's benefited me all my life. And it's something that, you know, honestly makes me feel close to my roots and close to my dad. It was something that was kind of a full circle thing. So, you know, growing up in the area that we grew up in is a really special thing. And I think people know that. And I'm just glad to get the chance to share that with more people.
Important for us to read the book, and I think to get it, because we you know, sometimes we're kind of preaching to the choir here, but your book getting into some major cities, I think that's important too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I'm very, very glad and fortunate. You know, we've got a publisher in Skyhorse, and they're distributed nationally by Simon & Schuster, so we're going to be all over the country. I'm doing events everywhere. That is a mind-blowing thing for a local farm boy to be thinking about. I never thought I'd be in this kind of a position, but I'm really glad that it's also available locally as well. I've got events coming up next week in Milwaukee. I've got events in Spring Green locally here, and so it'll be available nationwide, and it's also going to be available next week and at Arcadia Bookstore as well. So
that's awesome. Your event in Spring Green, can you tell us when that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's at 6 p.m. next Thursday, August 22nd, 6 p.m. on Thursday at Arcadia Books in Spring Green. And, you know, it's an interesting week in events because that's me Thursday night. There's another great event on Tuesday at Arcadia Books with the author Sarah Smarsh. That's at 6:30 on August 20th. She wrote a book called Heartland. It's also an amazing memoir about growing up in farm country in America and what that means today. So love it if people could get out to Arcadia Books on Thursday for my event or on Tuesday for Sarah's event. And books are also available online. My book's available on Amazon and everywhere else as well. But anybody who can get out to a local bookstore for an event or to buy the book, we really appreciate it. And we appreciate people supporting local business as well.
Brian, you know, we've talked a lot about farming's past. How do you see it as the, you know, in the future?
Yeah. You know, it's a world that is very exciting. The resilience of farm families, those that are still standing, is incredible. And when you combine that with how interested people are in where their food comes from, there's a real opportunity. So the way I look at it is, you know, dairy is going to remain a really crucial part of the Wisconsin economy. And cheese making and all of that is really important. We got a lot of people who have a lot of land that can't necessarily go only toward grown crops to feed their cows because the scale of dairy farming is getting bigger and bigger, and not everybody is necessarily able to keep pace with that. Now, our farm's an example of that. We sold our cows in 2021, but we are still raising custom heifers for other dairy farms. We're raising beef for consumers, and we're also raising a wide range of cash crops and diversifying that all the time to figure out the different things that we can buy and sell to continue to make a living. And so I think diversified farming is going to be something you see from a lot more farms. Some might continue to do traditional farming, but have some other side crops on the side that they're finding there's a market for. And I really hope that our country makes some changes in terms of our policy, in terms of how we arrange our economy, so that more people can have more ways to buy food locally and create more opportunities for those farmers as well. I think there's a world where we can do that. And we do explore that in the book near the end. We look for paths to try to find that direction.
I think, too, we have to be concerned about a vulnerable food supply here in this country, don't we?
Yeah, we really do. And we saw that during COVID. And it is also true whenever there's an outbreak of something, whether it's something that's affecting animals or whether it's something that shuts down a factory. You know, COVID was a difficult time, and whether it was because of the spread of the disease or whether it was because of the government action to try to contain it, one way or another, there were large parts of our supply chain that were shut down. You know, we had farmers locally who were having to dump their milk. And that came at a time when people in the grocery store, consumers in the grocery store, were trying to find the items they wanted on the shelves. They didn't always find them. And that's part of the reason that food prices soared so much faster. It wasn't because the farmer's food was more expensive. It was everything happened after the farm gate. And when all that food supply got stalled, it led to disruptions. People didn't have what they needed and led to higher prices. And we'll face that more, and we'll face that again whenever there's an outbreak of a bird flu, for instance, or anything like that. There's going to be more times like that. And that's why harnessing our local farms, finding ways to make those 2 million farms able to make a living and able to supply more of our types of food in new and more ways is good for us, because it means that we can have more paths from the farm gate to the dinner table for our food. That's good for our farmers, and that's good for our consumers in the event of a disaster. So I think it's something we can do, and I think it's something we really urgently have to do.
Another issue that you discuss in the book, Brian, and we've talked about it on this program a time or two, but the real mental health crisis among farmers these days.
Yeah, it's true. Mental health is a very important issue. As many of your listeners know, there's an incredible organization called the Farmer Angel Network that started, you know, in Sauk County not long after a local farmer, unfortunately, and tragically took his life. And, you know, these are hard issues. It's really hard to face. But boy, when you get talking about them, you realize you're not alone. And we've talked about that in our own family. You know, we have in the book, we have passages where my dad is really having some dark thoughts after the sale of our cows. And we talked about, we worked through it. And, you know, what got him through it is thinking about his grandkids. And that is something that is so special. And I'm so glad that that's where our story went. But so many stories don't. And when people don't talk about that issue, they feel alone. And so part of the reason we're sharing some of our difficulties with that in the book, and part of the reason that the work of Farmer Angel Network is so important, is because it lets people know you're not alone, you know. And farm families, boy, you know, we grow up knowing how to work, and you put your head down, you get it done. And that's a good thing. But it's also a mindset that can keep you from talking, or keep you from talking about the things that are bothering you. And farm families, they get the work done, but they also need to look up and be willing to share, hey, I'm having a hard time here. Because if you do that, it's something that can be worked through, and you'll find that you're not alone. So there's strength in speaking up, not shame, but it's something that we need to work on to do more of and encourage more people to speak up.
Brian, do you have another book in the works or something in mind?
There's always another book in the works. You know, I think that there are stories to tell about rural communities all over this country. I think a lot about the way that a lot of our small towns have been fading, and some of them are making incredible comebacks. I think there's things around that. So I think about stuff on that. I think about other stories from my family. There's a lot back there. It's a rich history that we have here locally, and I want to continue to tell it nationally. For the moment, I got my hands full making sure that we get the word out on this book, but I've got some more things cooking, and I hope to continue to be able to tell some of the stories that I say are the hidden stories of rural America. They're evident to us here locally, but nationally, people don't know, and I think they need to, because it's important what's happening here, and it's having a big impact nationally as well.
You know, we talk about a lot of serious issues, and we have during our talk here today, Brian, but there's a lot of good times on the farm, too. It'd be hard to imagine life if you hadn't grown up on the farm, wouldn't it?
It really would be. Some of the best times that I will ever have are on our land. I remember in the morning, my dad, just with one whistle, sending the cow dog out to the pasture, bring the cows in. I can still hear that whistle in the morning. I remember, you know, we would have snow days, and my dad would turn the light on in the feed room. And if the light was on and the door was open, we knew school was called off. And I think about driving on our land with my dad at night, and he'd check the hay to see if it was dry, and we'd watch the sun come down over the land. It is an incredible thing, as so many people who are listeners of your station know. It's an incredible thing to grow up close to the land, and I cherish it. So many of us cherish it, and you know, that's the thing that makes it all worth it. This way of life that's becoming more difficult and disappearing is such a beautiful thing, and we're really lucky to have it. And that comes along with some of the difficulty, and that's life. And I'm happy that we live in a place where you can see that on such full display.
Brian has been noted in such publications as Newsweek, Today, Yahoo News, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and now on the morning show on WRCO. How about that? You finally made it.
Absolutely. That's when I knew I was big time, I guess, huh?
Well, it's an awesome book, and I hope a lot of people in Southwest Wisconsin will take note of it. Again, Brian, you'd like to meet them next week in Spring Green, wouldn't you?
I would. I would love it if they came by at 6 p.m. to Arcadia Books on August 22nd. And I'm just humbled by the opportunity, and I thank you so much for having me on.
Brian, it's good to catch up with you again. Thanks for reaching out to us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks very much, Phil.
You bet. Brian Reisinger joining us. He's the author with Local Roots, and again, the book is Land Rich, Cash Poor. This is The Morning Show.